This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about representing yourself in court. I am here with Barrister Judge Rachel Goodall from Three Paper Buildings Chambers in London. Rachel is one of the few barristers who is consistently recommended in both of the leading legal directories, Chambers and Partners and the Legal 500. She sits as a deputy district judge in the civil courts and she is authorised to hear private children's cases. Thank you for joining us, Rachel.
It's a pleasure to be here, Hattie.
Marvellous. I just mentioned that we are recording remotely. So if the sound is not as crisp as it usually is, that's the reason why. So here we go, representing yourself in court. And I'm really, really pleased, as I was saying to you earlier, Rachel, that we're recording this with you today, because sitting as a judge, you obviously get to see firsthand what people turn up to into court when they're representing themselves. And we have a whole host of questions to discuss today that I think are going to be really, really useful. And the first question that we're going to discuss is, do I have to instruct a barrister or a solicitor to represent me in a court hearing? Can I represent myself? Now, for the sake of this podcast, I think we're going to refer to a barrister or a solicitor as a lawyer, since a lawyer obviously encompasses both. So let's start with that one.
Well, Hattie, you don't have to instruct a lawyer to represent you in court. You can represent yourself. Lots of people do. It's absolutely your right to do so. One thing I think is very important to consider is what type of hearing it is and what you're looking to get out of it, because it may be, depending on the issues, it's better to have a lawyer. But as I said, you don't have to. Without a lawyer as well, you can ask the judge whether you can have a Mackenzie friend come into the hearing with you. And we can, if you want, I can explain a bit more about that. But the simple answer is you can do it yourself.
Yes, I think I do want to discuss Mackenzie Friend a little bit later on in this podcast, because I think that's a very interesting topic, the whole concept of a Mackenzie Friend. And I'd like our listeners to get a good understanding of that, because we often do hear people say, when you go to court, do you have to have a lawyer representing you, or can you go yourself? So the short answer is no, you don't have to have a lawyer. So what is it called when you represent yourself in court? Because there's a term for that, isn't there?
Yes, you are a litigant in person, or sometimes people will say you're self-representing. Yes. So you often will see orders and it will record who's been present. And if you're one of the parties, it will say your name and that you are a litigant in person.
Yes, because actually, interestingly enough, one of the most frequently asked questions when people think about court is, what do you call yourself in court? So litigant in person, it is what you would say you are, or representing yourself when you're representing yourself in court. Okay, so if somebody has chosen to represent themselves in a court hearing, the next question is, should I let the court and the other side know that I will not have a lawyer representing me and that I will be representing myself in advance to the court hearing? Are there advantages to doing that? Should somebody take the courtesy and the time to do that?
That's a really interesting question, Hattie, because I imagine a lot of litigants wouldn't necessarily want to let the other side know, particularly if they're a lawyer on the other side, but they're representing themselves in court. Maybe if you're a litigant in person, you feel you don't want to reveal that. Maybe you're still weighing up your options about if you're going to do it yourself or not. But I would say being open and honest and transparent is the best way, particularly because the lawyer on the other side, or whoever is on the other side, will need to correspond with you. So they will need to know, and the court will need to know, do they correspond with you direct or a lawyer? Because if you have a lawyer representing you, that lawyer will receive all the correspondence. So it's absolutely crucial you tell the court, you have to. The other side, there's no obligation, but in my view, you should, because if you're representing yourself and you're the applicant, if there is a lawyer on the other side, they have to prepare the bundles.
Yeah.
That's what the rules say because in civil and family proceedings.
Indeed.
So you will get help.
Yes, I mean, because normally an applicant will have to prepare the bundles, which are all the documents that the court's going to rely on at the hearing, and file them with the court, send them to the court a certain amount of days prior to that. And if you're the applicant and you don't know that that either needs to happen, if you tell the other side, look, I'm representing myself in person, and I don't know how to prepare the bundles, or they offer to prepare the bundles, then that will assist the court greatly. So yes, no, I agree. When it comes to doing the administrative side, obviously not being a lawyer, you won't naturally know what the court would expect unless you have a specific court order that actually says you need to do A, B and C. But yes, I would lean on, as a litigant in person, the other side's legal team to try and get assistance to make sure you can have everything to the court as required. So the next question is, why could it not be a good idea to represent myself in court? Now, I have a very strong view on this. I'd like you as an expert as well to tell me what your thoughts and views are. And perhaps we can, after that, look at the McKenzie friend point. So why could it not be such a good idea to turn up to court and say, right, I'm going to do this myself?
Well, it could be that there are very complex legal arguments involved in the case, and it wouldn't in those circumstances be, in my view, a good idea to represent yourself, because that's what lawyers are trained to do. They're trained to know about the area of law they specialise in and know how to mount arguments and also respond to them. You're a litigant in person, whilst you may be intelligent and well-read, it's going to be difficult for you to know what those arguments are. And really linked to that is there may be issues or there may be remedies that you've completely missed. So there might be an order that the court can make that you just simply don't know about. And as I say, depending on the type of case, it's not the judge's job to tell you the sorts of things that you can have. It's not the judge's job to give you legal advice. It's not the other side's job to spot something that you might have missed. So those two things are really worth thinking about. But perhaps the most obvious is that if you're representing yourself, you will know your case very well, and you may have been immersed in your particular legal battle for a very long time and just simply not able to see the wood from the trees. So you're not able to be objective and stand back, look at the bigger picture that a lawyer can do, because a lawyer can look at everything and draw all the issues out. So that's probably the most important.
Yes, no, I agree. I completely agree with what you're saying. I mean, my view is very sort of clear on this. You know, if you're not, for example, a car mechanic, you wouldn't go and say, I think I'll service my car this year. I won't take it to a mechanic. I'll just read up on how to do it and I'll just get stuck in. You know, I think that litigants in person, more often than not, in key hearings, actually lose out a lot by representing themselves, because if you're not a lawyer, you're not legally trained, you're not going to understand every corner of the law, you're not going to be rehearsed like a lawyer will be in terms of, as you say, mounting up the arguments and making the case look so favourable in your for your argument, you know, for why you're there. Lawyers are trained to do that. That's what they do morning, noon and night for breakfast, lunch and dinner. And as you say, it's not a reflection on, I don't think, somebody's intelligence or capabilities or anything. And where you will probably know your case better than any lawyer could, because you know every page potentially and every word that's been written and everything that's been done. You've got to present that in a legal way in order for a judge to accept what you're saying over what your opponent's saying, whether they're a litigant in person or not, or whether they're a lawyer. And I have found in my experience that whenever we have been up in court up against the other side who is a litigant in person, they have never won the case. They have never been able to succeed in their case, because it's just been too difficult. And I'm not talking about initial hearings or administrative hearings of, you know, housekeeping hearings. I'm talking about substantial hearings where they do need to get technical in terms of the law. They do need to understand how to present that and get it to reflect on what their argument is. But yes, at the same time, I understand fees, legal fees, it can be expensive. But one of the things you mentioned earlier to me, Rachel, is direct access work, where a client may come to you and say, look, I don't have the money to pay you as a barrister for all of the work involved, but can you just advise on key areas of this? Or can you just come and represent me at the hearing, you know, with a little bit of prep, obviously, before? I think that's really worth considering if you're a litigant in person, if you're thinking of doing this yourself.
Absolutely, Hattie, because what I notice when I sit as a judge, when I have litigants in person in front of me, is that they of course know their case really well, but what they struggle with and why direct access might be something to think about if they don't have a lot of money or don't wish to spend a lot of money on lawyers, is during a hearing, you need to be flexible. You need to respond to points the judge is making, points that the other side are making. And I often find litigants in person can't be flexible because they have generally a sort of a rigid structure of, this is what I want, and these are the points, and this is what is frustrating me. A lawyer is often able to maybe take a view, know what the best points are of their case and what the weaknesses are. So if you know your strengths and weaknesses, and you also know what the judge is likely to order, then you can take a view and maybe not pursue a bad point. And in a litigant in person, in my view, is really unable to do that.
Yes.
So direct access, because you touched on it, Hattie, is where a litigant in person will run the whole case, will be corresponding with the other side, corresponding with the court, effectively dealing with all the litigation themselves, but bringing a barrister in, perhaps for, look, can I just have a couple of hours of your time so we can sit down, and can you just show me what I'm doing in terms of the preparation? I'm on the right lines.
Yes.
And can you just come along for this hearing, because it's the one before the final hearing, and it's where we're going to try and settle the case, and I just need someone to help me with a few aspects.
Yes.
So I think that's a really important consideration for a litigant in person.
Yes. Going directly to a barrister who does direct access work, like, and I know you do direct access work, Rachel, because then what it means is that you don't go via a solicitor's firm to instruct a barrister. And there's many, many barristers who are prepared to assist in that way. Obviously, there is a risk that runs with that, because if you are doing a lot of the work and something is not done correctly, then it's up to the barrister when they step in to try and assist you with that, and they can't really undo what has been done. But rather than have no legal assistance, that I think is something that, if you are thinking, well, I want to do this myself, I think the very, very least that should be considered is instructing a direct access barrister to assist at pivotal points of your case. Good. Okay, so Mackenzie Friend. Let's talk about Mackenzie Friend. And again, I have a view on this, but what are your thoughts and what is a Mackenzie Friend? Let's explain that to our listeners.
Well, a Mackenzie Friend is someone who can come into the court hearing with you, provide moral support, they can sit next to you, they can help with your papers, take notes, and give you quiet advice. So that's not addressing the court, that's not making submissions on your behalf, and that's not acting as your agent or doing any of the litigation themselves. That's just someone, if you're faced with what you feel is going to be a difficult hearing, or you're worried about what might happen in court, never been to court before, you want someone with you, especially if there's a lawyer on the other side. I mean, imagine that you're going to court and it's a hearing involving something that's incredibly important to you, and there's a solicitor and a barrister on the other side, you can make sure that you can go in with someone. In July 2010, there is guidance. If you Google representing yourself in court, then the judiciary have I think it's the second or the third hit, but the judiciary have set out the government websites on a lot of court documents and procedures are very helpful. But there is a link to the practice guidance. As I say, it's July 2010 for Mackenzie Friends. And it sets out very clearly what Mackenzie Friends are and aren't. But one thing you need to remember is that it's up to the judge. So if you go along to a court hearing and you want to bring in, say, a friend of yours who can take notes and provide you with assistance in court, and the other side don't agree, you can ask the judge, and the judge can either allow that person to come in or not. It would be fairly unusual.
I was just going to say, how many
for a judge to not allow someone unless they are intrinsically linked with the case. For instance, say it's a dispute with your ex, and you're bringing your current partner in who is a witness in the case, or
yes, that will agitate the situation, or you know, is a part of it really in some form as a witness. Yes.
The judge can see that it's going to cause some potential issues, then that particular, you need to choose your person carefully. But I think it's a very good idea. If you can't afford a lawyer, or you don't want to have a lawyer, then why not have someone? Because especially if you bring someone in who is objective, who's not afraid to tell you where you think you might have done the wrong thing, or someone who can see both sides, think about your friends or someone in your family who...
There are professional Mackenzie Friends, aren't there, Rachel? People that do it for a living and advertise themselves as Mackenzie Friends, aren't there, that come along and assist you?
Yes, and they charge for it.
Yes.
I would urge caution, because it's not a regulated body or profession.
Yes.
And there are Mackenzie Friends out there who admittedly will charge, many of them, less than lawyers, but you really need to think what you're paying for. And perhaps going back to the direct access point, are you going to pay someone to sit next to you, provide you with support and take notes and help in that respect? Or would you rather put your money to representation in terms of a barrister? So you've got to weigh it up, really. Yeah. I know which option I would choose.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I completely get it. And I think it does largely depend on what your hearing is about. What stage of your hearing are you at? Like you say, I think it's very important to think about, what is the Mackenzie Friend going to be doing for me? How much will it cost if I continue to get the assistance of a Mackenzie Friend versus going to a barrister for key elements of advice and key representation? So yes, but I think that's really helpful to have that in this podcast, in terms of what is a Mackenzie Friend. So the next question is, how do I prepare for a hearing as an applicant or a claimant? What are the key points I should consider? And I know we've already touched on the term bundles being the papers that a court is going to rely on when hearing the matter. But talk us through that a little bit, please, Rachel.
Well, Hattie, I would say, put yourself in the position of the judge. If you are going to court and you are wanting the judge to make an order, which is, you know, the most likely thing, you need to think, what information does the judge really need to know for me to get the result I want? So the first question you should be asking yourself is, what am I asking the judge to do? Am I asking the judge to resolve an issue about a boundary dispute with my neighbour? Am I asking the judge to make an order preventing them from parking in my drive all the time? Am I asking the judge to order that someone I've done some work for pays me the money? Am I asking the judge to order that I have contact with my children? You know, ask yourself the question and then think, well, how do I persuade the judge to make that order? So you need to prepare thoroughly. It's preparation, preparation, preparation.
Yes.
That's what lawyers do. They prepare for the hearing. Whenever I get a set of papers in when I'm instructed as a barrister, I think, okay, what is my client asking the court to do? how can I prepare that? And you need to do exactly the same thing as a litigant in person. Yes. So if it's the first hearing, then the court will probably have limited papers. And I think a really helpful thing you can do is write out a chronology. So a history, let's go back to the neighbour dispute. The neighbour keeps parking on my drive. I've tried to have a talk with them and they won't listen. So maybe tell the judge in a chronology, don't make it 50 pages long.
Even bullet points is really helpful, isn't it?
Bullet points are fantastic. You don't need to worry too much about necessarily your spelling and grammar. What you need to worry about is getting your points down in a concise manner. So a busy judge dealing with lots and lots of different cases is able at a glance to say, right, this is the issue.
Yes.
So you could do a chronology over a couple of pages and demonstrate what you've tried to do to resolve it and when these incidents have been happening. You could also write out a list of issues. This is the order I'm seeking, and this is why. I'm seeking an order that you stop my neighbour parking on my drive. The reason why is it's causing a nuisance. I can't get in from home. I've got an elderly mother who lives with me. I can't get the shopping in. I can't, whatever the issues are
and the reasons. Yes, in your matter. Yes, and again, I find that bullet points, when we're writing chronologies and list of issues, if somebody's doing it that isn't so well rehearsed as a lawyer, works really well, because the judge then can quickly read what you're saying, rather than pages and pages and paragraphs and paragraphs. I mean, judges, unfortunately, as you know better than I do, Rachel, they're pushed for time. There's a lot going on in the courthouses. They have hearings slotted into hearings that have already been booked in that they weren't expecting to hear. They have to pick up those papers. And sometimes it's not that long before the hearing that a judge gets the opportunity to see the papers of what is the hearing all about. So I find that the shorter and the more to the point you make your documentation and paperwork when trying to explain what the case is about, what the list of issues are, what a chronology of events is about, the more helpful you are to the court. And the more helpful you are to the court, the more the court will appreciate that. I think that has to go without saying.
Absolutely. So do the judge's job for them. Say to the judge, this is the order I want, please.
Yes. Always
have the power. Know the judge's powers, which might be exactly, but that might be difficult, because representing yourself, you're not necessarily going to know the ins and outs of the law, but you should have done a bit of research to understand whether the judge has the power to make the order. So that's very important.
Yes.
But tell the judge, look, this is the order, please. This is why. In most of the cases that I deal with when I sit, I don't have those sorts of documents, and I don't always have them from lawyers, actually. And I find that it's very difficult.
Whoa. Yes. Well, this is the thing, you know, because I have to say, on many occasions, I mean, we had a divorce hearing where the other side, the second hearing where the other side didn't have a Form E, and they had lawyers from the start. And that's a very key document to a financial hearing. If there's no Form E, how can you even possibly? And we were screaming about it weeks and weeks prior to the hearing. But you're right. I mean, I have seen lawyers come to court and not have the paperwork that the judge needs to see, or there's too much of it. And you know, that goes the other way. But yes, I mean, it's very important to make sure that the court has, at least from your side, even if the other side have not prepared everything that they were supposed to prepare, even from your side, to have everything that you think can assist the judge in seeing your point of view from a legal point of view and from the actual case itself, and help it, assisting the judge to understand it, at least to be able to achieve the order that you want to come out with. Good.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, that is all we have time for. I sound like a narrator of a book story now online. Jack and Ori was my thing too many moons ago. I can hear probably lots of listeners saying, who was Jack and Ori? Did you ever watch Jack and Ori, Rachel?
I did.
Right, well, that was, Rachel, that was really, really helpful. Thank you ever so much. I know we've got more questions to go through, and I think it'll be incredibly useful for us to look at recording part two when we can. So thank you. And I will say to our listeners, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you.